Here's Skip Heitzig to tell us why heaven will be so special.
Remember what John wrote? Beloved, we are the sons of God, and it doesn't yet appear what we shall be, but we know this, when he appears, we'll be like him, for we will see him as he is. That is absolutely unfathomable to a Jewish person in the New Testament. God will be directly with his people. Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart, they will see God. There will be no distance, no long-distance communication. It will be one-on-one. It will be face-to-face.
Make the connection.
People are suckers for inspirational stories, which is why I think shows such as Extreme Makeover: Home Edition do so well. When we hear the story of a family that has struggled and has been down and out, only to have the member of the Extreme Makeover design team come and give them a new start, it resonates deeply within us all. Why? Because we all long for a new beginning. And today in The Connection, Skip Heitzig will tell us about the Extreme Makeover Eternal Life Edition, as we get a glimpse of what eternity with Christ will be like. However, before we get started with that, we'd like to remind you that when you contact us for the first time today, we have a free gift we'd like to send you. Anyone contacting us for the first time today will get a free teaching from Skip called God is Not a Swear Word. So if you've never done so before, give us a call at 1-800-922-1888 to receive your free bonus teaching from Skip, or write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. Would you like a new start? Would you like a new home? How about a new body? Well, Jesus Christ will provide all of that and more in the most extreme makeover in all of eternity. And if you stay with us, you'll learn all about it.
And make the connection.
Open your Bibles to the book of Revelation, chapter 21, and we'll join Skip Heitzig as he continues to explore history's last chapter.
You see, God made the earth for us to live on, inhabit, dwell in, enjoy. But the earth has been under a curse. We have destroyed it. Sin has covered the face of the earth, and one day it will be destroyed. And even Isaiah predicted this. Isaiah 65, he said, behold, I create new heavens and new earth. The former shall not be remembered or come to mind. In Psalm 102, the psalmist says, of old you laid the foundations of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you will endure. Even Jesus said, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. So, this piece of dirt called the earth, this dirt clod in this huge universe, is a disposable planet. Not that we should dispose of it, not that we should indiscriminately trash it, but let me say, if you're in the mode to preserve the environment, it's not going to last. God designed it for temporary use. It is temporary. It will one day be disposed. It was never meant to endure. I'd like you to turn to another passage in the New Testament. Just turn left a couple books to 2 Peter. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise. The elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? Looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, the elements will melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and new earth in which righteousness dwells? That's a good question, isn't it? Back in verse 11, seeing that all these things are going to be dissolved, how should we live? What manner of persons ought we to be if this is all temporary? Should we be focused upon that which is temporary above that which is eternal? The word, by the way, in that verse, what manner of persons, literally means exotic or foreign. What different, foreign, exotic life should we be living? In other words, our life should be different from the life of the inhabitants of this globe who don't know Christ. Our citizenship is in heaven. This is all very temporary. Now, what is the cry of people who want to justify their behavior right now on this earth? If they want to do something and they want to justify what they're doing, usually they say, hey, everybody's doing it. The Christian's response ought to be, yeah, but it's all temporary. It's not going to last. It's one day going to be burned up. And so we should live differently. A couple biologists did an interesting experiment where they took a caterpillar. In fact, they took a bunch of caterpillars. And they put these caterpillars with the lead caterpillar, the leader, on the rim of a clay pot. The pot had a plant inside. Caterpillars live off of green things like that. But the lead caterpillar was put head to tail with the last one, and it was just one circle of caterpillars on the rim of that clay pot. And they went round and around and around and around and around and around and around for a week. In a week, they died of exhaustion and starvation. Not one of them broke away from the rest to get into that plant and eat and live. Isn't that so much like our world? Whatever the new trend, whatever they're doing, I got to stay in step. What manner of person should we be if there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth wherein dwells righteousness and all of this stuff is passing away? Break away from the crowd and get life. Live spiritual life. Now, back in Revelation, comes the question, what is this eternal state going to be like? Not much details are given, only one clue. And I don't like the clue, but I'll go through it because it's written. It says, also there was no more sea. You know how troubling this has been to me over the years? I have wrestled and struggled and agonized over that phrase in the Bible. I love the ocean. I came from the ocean. I love the sea. There'll be no more sea. And I don't know if you've ever gotten it, but I get people who will say, you know, things like, but I love my cat. Certainly my cat will be in heaven. It couldn't be heaven without my cat. If that person isn't there, I don't want to be there. It couldn't be heaven without that person. Those are the infantile kind of things that we talk about. And I've seen that about the sea. It couldn't be heaven without the sea. I've even tried to reinterpret this verse a little bit. Bring in a few metaphors here. It says, for instance, in the Bible that the Gentile nations, apart from the covenant of God, are like the restless sea. You go, yeah, that's what it means, and there won't be any of those kinds of people. Or the Antichrist that comes out of the sea. Says, yeah, that's probably it, the sea of unbelievers. I think, however, I take a more literal approach. There won't be any sea. And actually, I want to say that there's a lot of information in that little sentence, perhaps more than meets the eye. It simply means the earth will be different. Right now, we live in a very watery world. Two-thirds of the earth is water. Most of our bodies are water. Most of plant and animal life is water. It's the only planet in the universe that we know of that has the amount of water needed to sustain the biosphere that we have that is so dependent on water. If you don't drink water, you'll die. They say you need 8 glasses a day so that you're not dehydrated. So we are dependent upon the use of water. There's water on our earth now. In the millennium, we're told in many places there will be an abundance of water. But we're told here there is no sea. So the new heaven and the new earth will not operate on the principle of water. There will not be the demand in our celestial bodies for water as there is in the bodies that we have now. You say, yeah, but will there be any water at all? Well, Revelation 22 says there's a pure river of the water of life. We'll get to that next time or in a few weeks. So why does John even bring this up? Did he do it just to tick me off? No, I think he did it just to say it's going to be different. And that's as profound a way as you can say it's different. A new heaven and a new earth, and there's no sea. It's going to be a very different environment. Also, we know that seas separate people, right? They separate us from one another. There will be no separation, just that new earth, whatever size, whatever look, no sea, no great divisions, all of God's people living under the authority of Christ. Next, we come to the New Jerusalem in verse 2. I, John, saw the holy city, the New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven. This is a different kind of a city. From God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. This then is the capital city of eternity. This is headquarters. This is command central, the New Jerusalem. Now, this isn't all there is to heaven. There's a new heaven, a new earth, and coming out of heaven somewhere, perhaps even orbiting around the earth, is this city called New Jerusalem. We even know its dimensions later on. We're told it's 1,500 miles cubed, just a little smaller than the sun, or excuse me, than the moon. So it could be, as some think, that it will just sort of orbit around this new earth. Whatever it is, architecturally, dimensionally, it's more modern and different than anything we've ever known. Again, this sort of begs the question, are you sure this is literal? Well, let me put it this way. If this isn't literal, then I have no idea what this means. And you can look at this and say, well, you know, he said this, but he didn't mean that. Well, then I would ask you, who's going to unravel the mystery of what he means if he doesn't say what he means? Some person says, well, I think it means this. Well, I think it means that. I think it means what he said. It's what he saw. That's what he wrote. Oh, but it's so hard for me to picture. Of course, you're in this dimension. All you know is what you have seen and experienced. It's as hard as for you to believe this as it would be for God parting the Red Sea or creating the heaven and the earth the first time. That's a big feat in and of itself. It's a new Jerusalem. How many of you have taken a tour with us to Israel? Raise your hand. It's awesome to go and visit Jerusalem. I've walked around its walls many times. I've scoped it out. I've studied its archaeology. But let me say this. If you've never gone on a tour to Israel, if you've never seen Jerusalem, you will take an awesome tour one day. It's going to be very different, however. It is kind of nice to compare the old with the new to have a frame of reference. But this is a new city. God has desired such a city. There has never been a holy city like this. Abraham looked for it, right? It says that Abraham in Hebrews 11 looked for a city that had foundations whose builder and maker is God. That's the New Jerusalem. We know that in the millennium, Jesus Christ will rule from Jerusalem. But there will be a rebellion at the end of the 1,000 years. Here now is a new Jerusalem, not an earthly city. Notice what it's called here. The holy city, New Jerusalem. It's just as new as this earth is new when it's created, the new earth. You have a new heaven, a new earth, and a new city coming out of heaven, descending. Same phraseology is used down in verse 10. Hard to imagine a holy city, isn't it? Usually people think the country is holy. The boondocks are holy. But the city, there's no such thing as a holy city. Would Albuquerque qualify? A holy city? Los Angeles? San Francisco? Rio? Stockholm? Tokyo? Not at all. Why will it be holy? Because all, get this, all of the occupants in it will be holy. Every single inhabitant will be holy, and that's marked out in verse 8. The cowardly, the unbelieving, the abominable, the murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, all the liars that have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. It's a holy place. Notice it's described as a bride prepared for her husband. Why is it described that way? It's a city, It's a place. It's given dimension in verses after this, but it's called, it's seen as a bride adorned. Because though it's a place, it is described in terms of its populace. In terms of it, it's a bride city. The bride inhabits it. The people of God inhabit it. And it's adorned, it's beautiful, just like a bride on her wedding day. This is then the bride city. And we're going to get more to the New Jerusalem because it's given in detail in verses after this. Let's look now finally in verse 3 at the new presence of God. This is to me the best part. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God." Now that is monumental. It has always been God's heart to hang out intimately with his people, to have fellowship with his people. There's always been something in the way, though. It's been sin, and it's marked all of creation. So in the Old Testament, God set up a tabernacle. Remember, God's presence dwelt in the tabernacle, in the Holy of Holies, in the Ark of the Covenant, and this pillar of fire and smoke guided them through the wilderness. Then there was the temple, and it says the Shekinah glory, or the glory of God, dwelt within that place, inhabited that place. But there were still courts, and you couldn't go into the inner court. Nobody could except the priest. There were separations. There were rituals, sacrifices. So there was a distance between God and man. So ultimately, in speaking to man, God sent his Son into the world. Emmanuel, God with us. And it says, "And the Word became flesh," and literally in Greek, "and tabernacled among us. And we saw his glory." But this is in an entirely different sense. No more veiled, no more ritual, no more cloth tent in the wilderness, no more even veiled God in flesh. God dealing directly with his people, in intimate fellowship with his people. Now, he's with us today whenever two or three gather in his name. He said he'll be with us. He's also with us individually. "Lo, I am with you always to the end of the age." But in the future, it will be different. It's not, he is with us now, but he'll dwell directly with us. Remember what John wrote? "Beloved, we are the sons of God, and it doesn't yet appear what we shall be, but we know this, when he appears, we'll be like him, for we will see him as he is." That is absolutely unfathomable to a Jewish person in the New Testament. God will be directly with his people. Jesus said, "Blessed are the pure in heart. They will see God." There will be no distance, no long-distance communication. It will be one-on-one. It will be face-to-face. You know, I've discovered that no matter how sophisticated you are or spiritually, theologically well-informed you may be, you have a basic desire to see God. You do. You're not satisfied with anything less. David said, "I will be satisfied when I awake in your likeness." Do you remember H.G. Wells' story of the invisible man? It's been put into film on several occasions. It's sort of an interesting idea. Who hasn't wanted to be invisible at one point or the other and walk into a room and hear what people are saying? But as the story unfolds, people have found it very uncomfortable to relate to somebody who is invisible. People have always had trouble with the invisible God. Your kids have asked you questions like this: "What does God look like? How big is God?" And I bet you've answered it with something like, "Well, we don't ask those questions. We don't know." But deep in your heart, you ask the same questions. You want to know. Even Moses did. Moses saw miracle after miracle after miracle, and basically at Sinai he said, "Time out, God. I want to see you. Show me your glory." God said, "Moses, if you see my glory, you'll die. You can't see me as long as you're in this body of flesh. You will just fizzle up, post-toasty." Then there was Philip. When Jesus was talking about the Father, said, "Look, just show us the Father, and that'll be enough." Then there was Peter, James, and John, who saw the glory of Jesus as he was transfigured with Moses and Elijah in bright, radiant light. And of course, he wanted to build a museum right there. He wanted to just keep it just like it was. What did he see? He saw a preview of coming attractions, a commercial for heaven. He saw it and he went, wow, that's what I want. He wanted to see, really, the face of God more and more. Like Moses, like Philip, like those disciples, you will never be totally satisfied until you see the face of God. So you ought to yearn for your home. And knowing that you have a new heaven and a new earth, this eternal state, in the future, after the kingdom age, ought to whet your appetite. You know, when I travel, I like to take a picture or two of my family because they're going to ask me when I travel, are you married? Do you have children? Yes, here they are. And at night, I'll pull them out when I'm lonely. I'm reminded of them. But I'm not satisfied looking at the picture. I don't pull them out and go, oh, okay, I can stay a few more weeks. Right? It just whets my appetite to be closer. I may call them on the telephone and they'll hear my voice and I'll hear their voice. It doesn't satisfy me. It accentuates the loss even more. It's only when I embrace them and I'm face to face that I'm satisfied. All of that to say this. Every single experience you have now as a Christian, every great worship experience you have, every time you say, I felt so close to God at that time, was never meant to satisfy you, only to whet your appetite for heaven. If it satisfies you, you could say, I don't need any more. I had that one experience. No, you want to get closer to the Lord. And worship does that. It whets our appetite. Are you a Christian this morning? I pray that the grip of this world would be loosened in your life and that you would see this temporal stuff in the light of eternal stuff. And if you're not a Christian this morning, I would pray that you would have your appetite whet for heaven. What better place is there? I would finally say to Mark Twain, you can keep Bermuda, I'll take heaven.
Well, there isn't any place on earth that can compare with the beauty and splendor that we'll experience in heaven. Although places like Bermuda might give us a little taste of what paradise is like, we should never be fooled into thinking that those echoes are the real thing. And that's all the time we have for today. But stay with us, and I'll tell you how to get a copy of today's message right after we tell you how you can help us share the good news of the Bible with people all over the world. Here's more about Global Connectors.
The Central American nation of Belize has the second largest offshore reef in the world and most extensive cave system in all of Central America. It also has 127 offshore keys, numerous rivers for rafting and kayaking, wildlife reserves, and of course, miles of gorgeous Caribbean beaches. All of these factors and more draw tourists and thrill-seeking adventurers from all over the globe. But these thrills are short-term. The ultimate joy in life is to know eternal life through Jesus Christ. That is the mission of Lighthouse Christian Radio Broadcasting from San Pedro and also heard in Belize City. It is here that The Connection and other Bible-based programs are bringing hope and truth about the real paradise of heaven.
The Connection has Lighthouse Christian Radio. They have a huge impact on the community out there. Everybody knows who that is, and they give away those free radios where it only tunes into the one radio station, and it's a solar power. So kids are just dying to get their hands on those.
You can help the ministry of The Connection reach the people of Belize and other nations around the world with the gospel as a member of the Global Connectors. It's just $25 a month to be a member, and when you sign up, we'll also send you a new teaching each month. Help us share the good news of God's love with people all over the world as a member of the Global Connectors. It's just $25 a month, but that small amount may make an eternal difference. Join the Global Connectors today when you call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org.
Well, Belize is only one of the many countries we're targeting for more impact this year here in The Connection. Find out more about becoming a Global Connector when you call us at 1-800-922-1888 or by logging on to connectionradio.org. That's also how you can get a copy of today's study, All Things New. We'll send you a copy on CD for just $6. That includes shipping when you call us at 1-800-922-1888. And another way for you to get in touch with us is by mail. We always enjoy getting letters from our listeners. So if you'd like to share a thought, a prayer request, or a testimony about what God's doing in your life, write us today at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199.
And make the connection.
Next time, we'll begin our final message in this series as Skip Heitzig shares with us some practical lessons we can take with us from our study of Revelation. The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.